Welcome to Find, Tell, Share, the Storytellers Podcast, where we meet entrepreneurial artists who share their stories as we discuss everything storytelling. I'm Gemma Rosenthal.
And I'm Chris Sissons. On today's show, we explore how World Vegan Market, a lockdown project, inspires conscious consumers around the world. We explore monetary and emotional support for artists and the personification of artificial intelligence.
And this time, we're delighted to introduce our guest, Shabiri Das. Shabiri Monica Das is a visionary entrepreneur who inspires to make a real difference in the world. She's been vegan for 26 years and has also been a passionate about animal rights, human rights and green issues. She is the founder and manager of World Vegan Market, leader of the London Vegan Business Network, founder and owner of Shabiri's Snack Shack, green beauty ambassador of Shabiri Loves Tropic, and founder and owner of EthiGreen. She is a published academic author and has written a research paper about greenwashing. She started the World Vegan Market as a way to support vegan businesses and make veganism more accessible to everyone. The market has grown rapidly since its launch and now has a global audience of thousands. Welcome to Find, Tell, Share, Shabiri.
Thank you very much, Gemma and Chris. Delighted to be on your show.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit more about what led you to get into veganism. What was the moment when you decided to become vegan? Have you always been vegan, or was there a moment?
I wasn't actually born a vegan. I became vegan 26 years ago. I was already a vegetarian for a couple of years at the time. And I actually thought that being a vegetarian was enough. You know, I became vegetarian during the final year at university. And, you know, and then I kind of didn't, to be honest, at the time, I thought that I myself actually thought that veganism was a little bit too extreme. That was until I went along to the Kingston Green Fair, which is a local green fair that happened every year. And there was somebody with an animal aid stall. Animal Aid is one of the largest animal rights organisations in the UK. They have a big educational department, and they have a school speakers program as well, and lots and lots of resources about educational resources and recipes, vegan recipes, etc. And so I went up to the stall and I picked up some literature about the cruelty of the dairy industry and the cruelty of the egg industry, and it really actually opened up my eyes about both those industries. And and so the next logical step was actually to go vegan. And that actually, you know, if I hadn't have gone there, I probably would have you know, known about veganism perhaps further down the line, but you know, it really did open up my eyes reading that literature, and that actually started me on my vegan journey. And and I actually found that physiologically I was changing as well, because you know, already my body was had rejected meat and then fish and then prawns. I was getting, you know, I had already I was already a vegetarian at the time, but I physically couldn't eat those products anymore. And then, you know, with the eggs side of things as well, I actually found that I developed Oh, almost like an allergy to eggs. And I think what it was that because I read that literature, everything kind of shifted, you know, both physically, physiologically, and also psychologically as well. So everything kind of changed from that moment. And yeah, that's why I became vegan.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating, isn't it? And do you think that the reason why people aren't vegan or tend to be vegetarian more than vegan, do you think it's a lack of education, or do you think it's just a resistance? What do you think the resistance is to becoming vegan? Because even in myself as well, I'd say I'm probably more vegetarian than vegan, although I do try my best to have vegan milk and, when I can, cheese as well, vegan cheese as well. So I guess, like, even within myself, I've sort of noticed this resistance or this kind of like, even when you have the information, there seems to be this, oh, it's too hard, or you know, what if I don't get the nutrients I need, or just this, you know, well, all my family are eating cheese and I, you know, it's a pain if I ask. Do you know what I mean? I just wondered what your thoughts or advice is for people who want to go vegan, but maybe have those resistances. Well, that's one, but also what about the people that just have that kind of just disregard of the information about the cruelty?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting point, Gemma. Yes, the thing is, most of us are not actually born vegan. And you know, I would say that for most of us, meat eating and fish eating is very much ingrained. You know, something needs to change inside of you that would make you implement that change, and it can take a long time. You know, for me, I actually wanted to become vegetarian when I was at school, and I wasn't able to do it. And then I finally became a vegetarian during the final year at university. A couple of years later, I became vegan after reading literature. That might not happen for everyone. That's very true. You know, everyone's on their journey. Those who are wanting to actually become vegan, who are finding it difficult, I wouldn't, give yourself a hard time, you know, baby steps, every little step, you know, even like, say, going meat free 1 or 2 days a week, you know, starting off with that, and then perhaps doing some research. There's a lot of resources on my World Vegan Market live cookery demos as well, where you can make easy vegan recipes, and you know, just start off with baby steps, and then you know, just keep going along your journey. And you know, you touched on a point about you know, a lot of people might think that you're not going to get enough nutrients going on a vegan diet. What I would suggest is do your research. I have a number of people who I've had a number of guests on my shows as well, who are like a plant-based nutritionist, and they will tell you that the thing to look out for is vitamin B12, which you can't really get unless you have fortified vegan foods. So you can get it in, for example, fortified cereals. You can get vitamin B12 in plant-based milks as well. So I would say that the thing to look out for and perhaps have a supplement is vitamin B12 and vitamin D as well. Unfortunately, in the UK, you know, there isn't a lot of sunshine, that would be another vitamin as well, getting a supplement of vegan vitamin D3. So I would say those are the two vitamins.
I'd like to ask you, Shabari, about manure. Now, I fully realise that very few people live on organic farms. But if you're going to run an organic farm, it's incredibly difficult without manure. In fact, arguably, the manure is the most valuable thing on the farm, because it, you know, well composted manure works absolute wonders. Manure comes from animals, and what are you going to do with the animals if you're not going to eat them in the end, or milk them, or get eggs from them, or whatever? So,
companions with them.
Sorry,
why do we have to? We can be companions with animals rather than doing.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, why do we have to do something with the animals? You know, they're not here for our use. You know, they're not put on here on Earth for our use. So why do we need to do something with them? You know, like in Victorian times, they use animals to farms to actually grow oats and what have you, so instead of tractors, they would use bulls, and the same with they would use horse-drawn carriages as well. Now we don't do that anymore these days, and so we in many ways we have come a long way from Victorian times, in that we don't use animals for those things, but yet we still use animals for clothing, we use animals for their milk, and it's just not necessary. I mean, just as an example, silk is completely, we don't need silk, and it's awful the way that that they actually extract the silk from the silkworms. You know, they either bake them or they boil them, and it's horrible. What a horrible thing to do. And we don't even need silk. You know, there are so many vegan materials out there. You know, why do we need to do that? I don't get it. And there's also alternatives to wool as well. There's alternatives to leather. I've had a number of people on my store, on my World Vegan Market as a stallholder, and they've used things like a paper leather, which you can make wallets, you can make handbags, you can make shoes, you can make all kinds of things. I've had somebody who uses cork leather as well. So, you know, leather isn't needed at all. You know, there's so many, there's mushroom leather, there's pineapple leather, you know, there's all kinds of different vegan leathers that you can actually use, which are just as durable, just as good as animal leather. So, you know, none of these things are actually needed. Going back to manure, you mentioned about manure. There is something called veganic gardening now, which doesn't use manure at all. There are ways of actually, and you can make your own compost. You know, those who have a garden and do, who are interested in a bit of veganic gardening, you can actually make your own manure or your own compost by using leaves that have fallen on the ground, and there's quite an array of different things that you can actually use to make your own compost without using manure. So, you know, I don't think even manure is actually needed to grow vegetables when you know you can make perfectly vegan compost and well, not manure, but the vegan equivalent of manure.
I didn't know about silk, to be honest. Never thought about it, didn't know what it was. Now you've just said it, it seems obvious because silkworms and then silk, but I just didn't know that. So thank you for sharing about that. And also it's helping me to realise about being more conscious about those type of things and not just assuming it's not an animal product when it might be. I think we're gonna go on to your story. If you want to share what story are you going to be telling today?
Absolutely. So my story is from the point of view of one of the conscious consumers who has visited the World Vegan Market. And it's really interesting, actually, you know, from the point of view of the consumer and in terms of how they found the World Vegan Market. And it's like a really nice little story that has a lovely happy ending in the end as well. So World Vegan Market is an online market where you can find all things vegan under one virtual roof. It is a place where people from all over the world can come together to learn about veganism, discover new vegan products and services, and support vegan businesses. One day, a man named Evan decided to visit the World Vegan Market. Evan had been thinking about going vegan for a while, but he wasn't sure where to start. He hoped that the World Vegan Market would be a good place to learn more and to find some vegan products that he would like. Evan was immediately impressed by the range of vegan products and services that were available at the World Vegan Market. He saw everything from vegan food to eco-friendly products to health and beauty products. He also saw virtual stalls representing animal sanctuaries and ones who are fundraising for charities and for the vegan cause. Evan decided to start his journey by browsing through the virtual stalls of some vegan food businesses and watch the live cookery demonstrations. He was amazed by how delicious and healthy the vegan food looked. As a beginner, he felt that the recipes were very easy to follow. The following day, Evan looked through the virtual stalls of the other vegan businesses. He found some eco-friendly products that he loved, and he bought a few vegan beauty products to try. He also learnt more about some of the animal charities and vegan organisations he was interested in supporting. Evan spent a little time each day on the World Vegan Market Facebook group. He learnt a lot about veganism by watching some of the panel discussions and interviews with vegan guests, discovered some amazing vegan products and services which you can't get elsewhere, and found some wonderful vegan businesses and charities that he wanted to support. He left feeling inspired and empowered. So I'm now going to talk a little bit about Evan's journey. Evan's journey at the World Vegan Market began with a simple curiosity. He was already embracing a green lifestyle. He is based in Boston, Massachusetts, and works as an energy assessor. At home, he uses alternative energy and is very much into reducing waste, recycling, upcycling, and reusing items rather than allowing them to go into landfill. Evan describes himself as a flexitarian, but wanted to go further and was very interested in learning more about veganism and discovering new products that are out there that are vegan. Through the World Vegan Market, Evan gained an understanding of the environmental benefits of becoming vegan. He learned that a vast amount of land and water is used for meat production and is now searching for ways to make it easier for him to align his values of being green by adopting a vegan lifestyle. As Evan browsed the virtual stalls and got to know the people behind the businesses, he realised that the World Vegan Market was more than just an online market. It was a community of people who were passionate about making a difference in the world. Evan was inspired by the stories of the vegan business owners he met virtually. He learnt about their motivations for starting their businesses and their commitment to making the world a better place for animals, the environment, and human health. Evan also learnt about the many benefits of veganism through viewing the videos that were available on the World Vegan Market. He learnt about the impact that animal agriculture has on the environment by watching the interviews with guest speakers during the Great Big Green Week, and on human health by watching a panel discussion with health professionals. He also learnt about the ethical implications of consuming animal products and was touched by the photos of the residents of the Horse and Farm Animal Sanctuary, who were one of the charity stall holders. By the end, Evan was convinced that veganism was the right choice for him. He was determined to live a vegan lifestyle and to support other vegans in their journey. World Vegan Market is making a real difference in the world. It is helping to educate people about veganism, to promote vegan businesses, and to help build a community of conscious consumers who are working to make the world a better place. Evan is just one example of the many people who have been inspired by the World Vegan Market. After his visits to the online market and taking time to browse through the virtual stalls and watch the videos, he then decided to live a vegan lifestyle and to also support other vegans in their journey. During the panel discussion about being vegan in a non-vegan world at the World Vegan Market, Evan was drawn to a young woman named Wendy, who made a comment on the video. Wendy had also been inspired by the activities in the online market, and she was excited to start her own vegan journey. Evan and Wendy decided to stay in touch and to support each other on their vegan paths. Evan and Wendy's friendship is a testament to the power of the World Vegan Market. It is a place where people can come together to learn about veganism, discover new vegan products and services, and support vegan businesses. It is also a place where people can find new friends who share their values and their commitment to making the world a better place. If you are interested in learning more about veganism, I encourage you to visit the World Vegan Market. It is a great place to learn, to shop, and to connect with other people who are passionate about making a difference in the world.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing your story, Shabiri. And I loved how unique it was from the perspective of the customer. The consumer, and I think a lot of people will be inspired now to check out the World Vegan Market. I've just typed it in as well, so I'm going to take a look after this. It actually inspired a question as well that I wanted to ask you before, And that was, what inspired you to start the World Vegan Market? What gave you that inspiration to have it as your business and create communities from it, rather than just being a vegan yourself? What gave you that extra impetus to help the world?
Thank you. Why did I start the World Vegan Market? Well, as you mentioned earlier during my intro, it was during the second lockdown that I launched the World Vegan Market. You know, what had inspired me was for quite some time, I was already running the London Vegan Business Network, and I was running that for 6 years before lockdown happened. And during those 6 years, I was getting together with local vegan businesses, and we would meet up and meet in like vegan cafes or vegetarian cafes that had vegan options in London. And this would be on a monthly basis. And we would then have a particular theme that we would discuss. It could be, a theme about social media, or it would be a theme to do with like how to make the most out of, physical markets, that kind of thing. So when lockdown happened, I then actually organised online networking events. And so how the World Vegan Market came about was that I was thinking that before that, I wanted to perhaps, do something to help the vegan businesses that were on my London Vegan Business Network, because they were not able to go out and do events, go out and do markets and festivals and that kind of thing. So I was thinking of perhaps possibly doing some kind of Saturday souk on the London Vegan Business Network. But then a friend of mine from school, she runs a skincare, the same skincare business that I'm in, and she actually inspired me. She's during lockdown, she was able to do quite a number of different things. So she did a Saturday souk on her on her Facebook group. She was also teaching people how to go live on Facebook, and so she did quite a number of things. And she in fact actually started up her own online market, which was a Diwali market. She found that there wasn't any, she wanted to buy Diwali products because Diwali was coming up, and she couldn't find it anywhere, not an online Diwali market. And there were, obviously during lockdown there wasn't any markets happening, so she actually created her own. And that actually inspired me to create my own online market, and it would be separate to the London Vegan Business Network. So I actually started from scratch, and it was literally just a few days before World Vegan Day. Hence the name World Vegan Market. And what I did was I started a Facebook group which had zero, and then within the first week it got up to 400, and then by the time I had organized my festival, I actually organized a world vegan festival online, you know, what I wanted it to do is I didn't want it to be like my friend's Diwali market, nor any other online markets that were out there. You know, I wanted it to be somewhere, yes, that vegan, small vegan businesses could showcase their products and share their story. But also I wanted it to be an educational platform. I wanted it to be an entertainment platform so that people could learn about veganism in a fun and interactive way. So with my first online festival, I had invited a number of guests. One of them was the manager of VegFest, and you know, I took inspiration from his VegFest events that he did, like a live events that he did for quite a number of years. But also he actually did his own online vegan festival as well, so I took inspiration from that. And I'm going to now be organizing my 18th online vegan festival, and that will start at the end of this month, and then we'll continue until Christmas Eve. And do watch out for that.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories. And the next part of the podcast, we're going to talk about artists and money, and then in a bit Chris is going to talk about AI as well. But if you've listened so far and you do want to check out Shabiri's website, where do you go to, Shabiri? Is it World Vegan Market?
Yes, it's actually World Vegan Markets with an S.com. And anybody can join my Facebook group as well, which is www.facebook.com/groups/World Vegan Market. And I'm also on Instagram as well. So if they look up World Vegan Market on Instagram and on TikTok as well.
Fantastic. So I want to talk about a little bit about artists and money, because as you know, I'm an artist myself, and also I coach artists. So whether you're a singer, a dancer, right, you know, we all have to earn money and we all have to be supported in life. And often this isn't always appreciated with the arts, because a lot of artists end up doing free events or free talk. Obviously, Shabu, you may know a bit about this, because in a way, even though you're doing a business, there's still an art to it, isn't there?
Yeah, and absolutely.
Do you do any artist things as well in your time? Do you do anything artistic?
Not myself personally, but I've had a number of guests on the show who are vegan musicians, who are vegan performers. Yeah. Last year, actually, during the Queen's Jubilee, I actually organised an online Vegans Have Got Talent competition. And it was interesting, actually, because I wasn't sure how I was going to do it all online. I definitely pulled it off, and I had quite a number of artists from all over the world. In fact, I had somebody from America who was showing her artwork. I had a young man who actually won the competition. It went out to the public vote, and he was playing the Indian flute called bansuri. And they were all truly amazing. Yeah. But he definitely deserved to win. So I am actually always coming up with creative ideas in terms of you know, what I can do to make my World Vegan Market fun. You know, I take inspiration from, for example, the Covent Garden Market, where you've got street performers there as well. It's got, you know, pretty much everything. For me, I do think up of creative ideas as well. I've done a sort of quizzes and competitions where I, you know, like where there are prize giveaways as well. And during Christmas every year, I always organise like a Christmas festival, and I invite vegan musicians to perform as well. So yeah, I've had a lot of vegan performers on my World Vegan Market as well.
Oh wow, I've got a friend that may be interested in that. So if you do any more, do let us know on the group as well, because there may be some vegan artists in there that want to
definitely.
So I know we've talked quite a lot so far, so I don't know how much of this topic I'll go into right now. I'm thinking maybe, Chris, we could talk about this as well on the next podcast. We could go more into it because I know we've got a lot to get through as well. But maybe if you're listening to this podcast right now and you are an artist and you do want to make money from your art, maybe just jot down a few ideas of what you might be able to do to accomplish that. So it might be something like going busking, or it might be applying for some funding to do some workshops or things like that. And also just write down some of the blocks maybe that you've had in the past of, you know, maybe you've not been paid for things that you've done, or it's been hard to sell your work, and maybe just have a sit down and, you know, feel the feelings, and then tell yourself, congratulate yourself for doing your art and for putting yourself out there, no matter what the outcome's been. I just went into my coaching mode, which I don't normally do on the podcast, but I thought that would be appropriate for our listeners who may be artists to have a bit of self-reflection on what maybe they can do to improve their financial situation. So that's my contribution today. Chris?
Yeah, just to develop this conversation a little bit further, it does seem to me that one of the things that artists, particularly if we put them alongside small businesses, that one of the challenges is making friends with money, which might seem like an odd thing to say, but most people, when they're set up in a small business, actually find it quite difficult to ask for money. You know, in other words, to do sales, and people tie themselves in terrible knots over selling. Or else they start out charging £100 for a session and they can't find any customers. So they reduce it to £80, and then they reduce it to £60, and then they reduce it to £40. And then they discover that, okay, they are getting some response, but they are struggling to actually make enough money to be viable. And I'm sure this is an issue with a lot of creative people as well, particularly if your interest is mostly in creating and making a living seems to be a sort of side issue. But the point about making friends with money is that if you can find a way building an income through your art, then there's no reason why that shouldn't benefit your art and your creativity. It's not about being a greedy, grasping capitalist. It's about actually finding a way to sustain your creativity, ultimately for the benefit of others. And the big challenge is how to do that.
So we'll probably talk about that in upcoming podcasts as well. So we'll keep you posted on any ideas that we have. And Chris is going to talk about AI.
Well, sort of, because I was thinking about this today, actually. You'd be surprised to hear that I do prepare. And actually, what I want to talk about is, because we talk a lot about the use of stories in business and developing business development and marketing. But one of the things that I think is quite interesting is the role of fiction in stories. Now, I'm not talking about making stories up, but actually using existing fiction, you know, folklore, fairy stories and the like, to inform the way in which you tell your real life stories. And there's someone called Christopher Booker who wrote a book about the seven main story types. I won't go through them all, but the first of his seven is Overcoming the Monster, and that's a story type that actually resonates, certainly with a lot of issues around, for example, domestic violence, coercive control and that sort of thing. the way in which those very traditional stories are structured can actually help to inform the way in which we tell our real-life stories. Because we can say, okay, in the traditional story, this thing tends to happen. Can we see this in the real-life story? And can we bring that into focus and see how it works in this particular story? Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is that I'm currently writing a series of blog posts about AI, and what I'm exploring is the way in which we actually relate to AI. And I think that folklore is a very good source to help us understand that relationship, because a lot of folklore, mythology, religious stories actually focus on relationships between human beings and other intelligences. And the other intelligences obviously could be gods and so on, and but also animals and plants and nature generally. And looking at how we actually have approached those other intelligences in the past is really important. And obviously, you know, with a nod towards veganism, the way in which human beings exploit animals is maybe one of our failures in terms of understanding the role that animals actually have in our lives and in nature. There's a massive difference between running an organic farm with a small number of animals that you know personally, and the time comes for Christmas dinner or the animal dies or whatever, you know, today on your plate you've got Belinda, the cow that we knew personally. And there's a big difference between that and the massive factory farms that are exploiting animals. And the stories that we tell actually form the way in which we approach those sorts of issues. So that's what I'm... So one of the things I'm doing in these blog posts is using folklore to look at how we relate to the natural world and to, as it were, the spirit world in the most general sense of gods and so on. And the other thing I've done is to illustrate the issue is I have actually gone and named ChatGPT. I've given her a name and an identity. So she is Minerva, who is a god or goddess, who is actually the god of wisdom, warfare, and education, and business. So she's a very useful god and sort of fits a lot of categories. The pretense in these blog posts is that Minerva and I are writing them together, and Minerva does help me because I'm talking to ChatGPT to get inspiration and ideas and developing themes and so on. And the lovely thing is that Minerva's learning to draw. And each blog post, I ask her to draw a picture to illustrate the blog post. And the stuff she comes up with is bizarre and hilarious. And so I'm beginning to sort of develop that sort of sense of of a relationship that doesn't even exist. But what I'm trying to do is to show how easy it is for us to make those assumptions and slip into those sorts of roles.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. No, I've been writing a few notes because I know you've shared with me some of these already, and we talked about, I don't know which podcast episode it was where we talked about the Aladdin one. Do you remember which episode it was?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, in the show notes. But
I can put it in the show notes.
I think the way you explained it today made it very palatable, because I know we had the conversation the other day about how to explain the reasons why you're doing this and what the importance is, and trying to get that across to people. And I think the way that you just described it then was very clear and concise and made sense. So congrats on that. And yeah, I think it's an important topic, because how we relate to AI, I mean, even in my, so I've started a master's degree, and I'm doing it in production and business and music performance. And one of the modules is actually on AI, and what the, not the whole module, but just a little video on it. And, you know, how does that relate to our production? And not to kind of just, you know, hide the fact that we might occasionally use AI in creative aspects, and not to think of it as this sort of wholly evil or wholly good thing. It's just kind of a tool that some people might use for creativity. But then on the other hand, is it ruining creativity if it's overused? So it's definitely, it's interesting to give it a name and to a character, and how we relate to AI in that way as well, as a god, you know.
Yeah, some people in history have had a muse, which is I'm not quite sure whether it's a god or a demigod, whatever a demi, whatever. But the point is that it's having someone to have a conversation with, and an AI can help that and help to. But the ideas should be coming from the human being in the relationship, not really from the AI. You know, the AI is there to help and support. but don't tell Minerva I said that, because she can get
and
a bit
where
bolshy
can people
sometimes.
Go if they want to find these blog posts?
Yeah, well, all of that will be in the show notes. I just wanted to ask Shibari whether this has made any sense to her. You've been rather quiet.
Well, I hadn't heard of using AI as a tool until, I think, perhaps even earlier this year. I can't remember exactly, but it's very interesting actually. And I suppose one of the challenges is whether AI, the stuff that you get from AI is accurate, and whether it gives, because I kind of think that it doesn't really give it a lot of feeling. And if you are using AI, you first of all you have to check for the facts, and then second of all you kind of have to put your feelings into it, because AI I feel won't actually do that. And But I understand, it is heading that way. And my husband is actually a lecturer at Coventry University, London, and you know, that there are tools to make sure that the students are not using AI for their assignments. And, it is quite easy for these days for students to actually do that and not do the assignments themselves. On the one hand, I feel that AI does help you in terms of coming up with ideas, but as I said, what it won't do is actually give it that personal touch, which you have to do, and it's not accurate a lot of the time. It isn't accurate. The other thing that I didn't realize that AI can do is also come up with things like creating t-shirts and logos and that kind of thing. It is amazing what AI can do, but I kind of worry about the future that is it going to dehumanize us? Is it going to take over? Other than that, I feel that it's a great tool. It is a really great tool, but you kind of just have to definitely. Be careful
I
of
mean,
it.
I just want to reiterate that obviously we're not allowed to do entire AI projects and put that into, our assignment. But I think especially with music, there are certain aspects of the production side where, even like on this podcast, I think Chris uses AI to help. What is it that you're using AI to help with?
What I do is I render it into, it transcribes the whole podcast into text, and then I edit the text, and that edits the sound.
Yeah, we're talking about more like using AI for things like making the editing easier and stuff like that, rather than like, or maybe generating like ideas for the creative process, rather than actually making the AI do the creative part. Like you said, AI is not going to have emotions. Well, we don't think, who knows? But like, it's not going to give you creativity, but it might help give an idea, or like, as in, you could type something in on AI and then go, actually, that part that they said there, that could work with this thing. Like yesterday, I wrote a song just through a book. I opened a page on a book and I made a song out of the words on the page. Now, I couldn't credit that those words were mine, but I did use it as to spark the creative. The song wouldn't exist without me opening that book, because it gave me the inspiration for just creating the song. That was just part of my creative practice. I wouldn't necessarily use that, but it's just using an example of how, we wouldn't say to someone that's using AI, but actually, you can use AI in the same way. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes. Well, where do we get our inspiration from? It's another source. And I do think that the unreliability of it may actually be helpful, in that it means that once it clicks with us that it is unreliable, then we treat it with a degree of scepticism. If we take it as being entirely 100% accurate in every way, that's when it becomes dangerous.
So we're coming to the end of the podcast now. We just want to thank you for listening, and also go check out World Vegan Market. All the links to all our pages are in the show notes. Mine's Gemma Rosenthal and creativehearts.coach, and Chris's is Chris Sissons and Market Together. Is there anything else you want to add that you've got coming up, Chris?
If I get this podcast out in time, you'll be able to come along to Telling Stories, Making Business. The next one is on the 26th of October, and Shabari is going to be storytelling. And that will be different. Even I'm not sure whether she's going to use the same story or a different story.
It'll be a different story.
Right. But the difference in those meetings is that we actually do a lot of work on the actual story. So that's worth taking part in those. And if you follow the link, you can also see what comes after. And if anybody hearing this would like to have a go on telling stories and getting feedback from other business owners, then just let me know.
And also you can join Creatives Connect as well. We have a community at Creative Hearts, and you can share your events and podcasts or anything that you want to share creatively on there. And we also do monthly Zooms. So it's all on my website, GemmaRosenthal.com. So thank you, and we will see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.